In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it.
We were all born and raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, headquartered in Salt Lake City, Utah, more commonly referred to as the Mormon faith. All of us have left that religion and have been drawn to faith in Jesus Christ based on biblical teachings. The name of our podcast, Outer Brightness, reflects John 1:9, which calls Jesus the true light, which gives light to everyone. We have found life beyond Mormonism to be brighter than we were told it would be, and the light we have is not our own. It comes to us from without. Thus, Outer Brightness. Our purpose is to share our journeys of faith and what God has done in drawing us to his Son. We have conversations about all aspects of that transition, the fears, challenges, joys, and everything in between. We're glad you found us, and we hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to Outer Brightness, a podcast for post-Mormons who are drawn by God to walk with Jesus rather than turn away. Outer brightness, outer brightness, outer brightness, outer brightness. There's no weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth here, except when Michael's hangry, that is, hangry, that is, hangry, that is.
I'm Matthew, the nuclear Calvinist.
I'm Michael, the ex-Mormon apologist.
I'm Paul Bunyan.
Let's get into it.
So, welcome, Fireflies, to this episode of the Outer Brightness podcast. And as you can see, today we have two new guests. Well, I guess not new guests, but you've seen Brianna before. But we do have two guests with us today, Brianna and Dan. So we'd like to thank them for coming, and we welcome them to the Outer Brightness podcast. So, Brianna and Dan, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So the reason we have these two guests on our podcast is they're very similar to Paul and Michael, a.k.a. Dr. Pepper, and I. They are both post-Latter-day Saints who have found faith in Christ. And so the topic of our episode today is we are going to discuss what it's like being a post-Mormon and being a new Christian. So this episode, we want to really focus on advice for the post-Mormon new Christian. And so Brianna and Dan are really going to help us with this topic. So we're going to kind of talk to them, interview them, and give some advice from them, hear their background and their stories. And we'll kind of just have a discussion, go back and forth, and we'll share all of our advice. So we have this kind of shared background, this shared history of being Latter-day Saints and leaving and coming to Christ. So that's going to be the topic of discussion for today. So starting off, let's start off with Brianna. So the both of you in turn, so could you give us like a 5 to 10 minute synopsis of your journey from Mormonism and to Christianity?
So I grew up LDS. My parents, they were both converts as adults. And growing up, we were known as the Como Pioneers because we were like the first of our families to be LDS. And growing up, I really idolized my father, and he was a spiritual figure in my life, like the strongest. I kind of hinged my testimony on him because he was the leader, and he led our whole family through the growing up in the church and just everything. And I was part of activities. I went to the youth stuff, girls camp and all that stuff. And then years down the road, as I was much older, my parents were going to get a divorce. And that kind of shattered my whole world in that moment. At that time, it wasn't the first time that my parents, they were struggling. And the whole reason why it went so bad is because my dad had cheated on my mom, and this wasn't the first time. And several years ago, before all of that happened, when my dad first cheated on my mom, it was destabilizing for me and my faith, and I became agnostic. I was suffering through depression for several years during that time, and when it happened again, it was much worse, and it was with the same girl that had happened years before.
How old were you when that first
when you first found out?
I was 16.
Well, that had to be tough.
Yeah. And I was already struggling with my social circle. I didn't quite have a lot of friends growing up. I only had very few. And I was already kind of just dealing with my own questions of life and everything. And when this happened, it kind of like the church was my foundation for everything. And I felt like I could rely upon it. And my dad, I thought he was very strong, and I realized that he wasn't perfect. But what really got me was when my parents went to go get this taken care of, my bishop, he sided with my dad and gaslighted my mom about everything, basically saying it was her fault that he went and did all these things. And for some time, when I became agnostic, but I was still LDS, but I still kept attending the church, but I was secretly an agnostic. I didn't know if God was real or if the church was true, but I kind of got myself into an abusive relationship and went into some pretty dark paths, and I didn't know if I could keep living with this, and made me question things about God and about hell, because at that point I was suicidal, and you know, if I were to take my own life, I didn't want to go to hell. And so that led me into going into questions. I found some things about the church, and I also found some things about Christianity, because I ran into Jeff Durbin online with the videos from Apologia Church. And then it made me realize that after spending some time, I finally came to the realization that the church was not true, but also that Jesus did everything for me, and I couldn't find fulfillment in other people because they will always let you down. But in Jesus, you have everything. So yeah, that's pretty much my story.
Wow, what a testimony. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I echo Paul's words. I really appreciate your sharing that with us. That must be, I can't even imagine, you know, going through what you've gone through, but thank you for sharing that. I know that's kind of hard, and hopefully we'll make both of you feel comfortable. And, you know, if we ask follow-up questions, we'll try to be careful to, you know, not go too probing. We'll try to be considerate. So thank you for that. I don't have any follow-up questions. Do either of you have questions for her?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, yeah, thank you again for sharing that, Brianna. So, Dan, would you like to share with us a little bit of your story or journey from Mormonism to Christianity?
Yeah, absolutely. Brianna, thanks for sharing that. It's kind of funny what I've noticed. A lot of people that leave the church, that's kind of the road that they go down, is that agnostic path. And that's kind of where I landed, you know, within my teen years as well. You know, Paul already shared a little bit about, you know, our family and kind of where we stood in Utah, but I never really felt like a good Mormon. And I felt like I was a good person. I was doing a lot of good things. You know, I wasn't a bad kid, but you know, there were Mormon families in the church that, you know, they wouldn't let their kids play with me. So, because I wasn't the standard Mormon that they saw. So I never really felt like I fit in, even from an early age. And so looking back, there's a few stories that my family used to tell over the years, you know, that are just kind of funny, because even at a young age, I never really saw myself as a Mormon in this culture. I'll tell a story. So one family home evening, we were all sitting around the table, me and all of my siblings, and we were all talking about, you know, where do you want to go on your mission? And everybody's like, oh, I want to go to Italy. Oh, I want to go here because, you know, I want to learn a foreign language. And, you know, that was like that Mormon culture, right? I don't know if you guys experienced that at all too. But, you know, it came around to me, and I was like, I want to go to Burger King. So
that's my brother.
And so even at an early age, I my mind's on, I want to go to Burger King. You know, we go to McDonald's all the time, but, you know, Burger King sounds really good, that Whopper over there. So, and then, you know, my baptism experience, you know, you guys had that episode the other day about baptism. That got me thinking about my whole experience with that. And I remember I was the last kid to go on the day I was getting baptized. And my best friend went right before me. And I remember turning to my dad and I was like, he was explaining to me, you know, all of your sins will be washed away. And, you know, I was thinking about that. I was like, man, I was thinking of something physical, right? And I knew Kenny was going before me, my best friend. And so I turned to my dad and I go, how are you going to prevent Kenny's sins from getting on me since I was the last kid to go? So, you know, there were things that just didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me growing up. And looking back, you know, now that I'm not LDS anymore, you know, it makes even more sense that, you know, I just didn't fit that mold really. You know, at 13 was really when I was just like, you know, that's when I kind of started to rebel. And I'm just like, I'm not going to be this anymore. I'm not going to pretend anymore. And so I had a buddy that me and him were kind of, we'd kind of goof off in class. You know, we'd go to, after primary, we'd go to our class. And I remember one teacher that I had, he was talking about the devil and how he impacts everything that happens in the world that's bad, you know, it's because of the devil. And so I was just like, I was a smart aleck, and I looking back, I was like, I totally wouldn't do this again. But I said to him, I said, so you're telling me if I stuff a bunch of marshmallows up my nose and they happen to get stuck, that was the devil that made me do that? It's not my stupidity. And I remember this guy, this poor teacher, he was just very straight line Mormon. And he, you know, he wouldn't let his kids play with any other kids in the neighborhood. He would kind of keep them in. And I don't know if you knew him or not, Paul. He lived right next to my friend, Tommy Yates, but his wife, she would dress kind of like with the homemade dresses, like you see with, like,
what was his name?
The myths. I can't even remember his name anymore. But he got so upset when I asked him the marshmallow question that he sent me back to primary and I had to go sit with the younger kids to learn my lesson. So, but that
probably day a good move.
That day they were handing out cookies, so I got two cookies. So it was fantastic. But yeah, so my mom was really a big driver as far as, you know, telling me the church is true. And, you know, a lot of me hanging on and doing a lot of things throughout my teenager years was impacted by my mom. And I really just wanted to make her proud. You know, I went to seminary. I went through everything throughout high school and all of that until my senior year. And that's when I just told my mom, you know, I'm done with it. I'm not going to do it anymore. So I met a girl in high school, my now wife. I did marry my high school sweetheart, and she was a Lutheran. And so when I met her, I kind of started going to a Lutheran church with her and her family. And really, they kind of helped me through my transition out of Mormonism and helped answer a lot of questions. And they put up with a lot for me, just trying to...
As do we all.
Figure it all out, yeah. So... That's kind of my journey out of it. Any questions from you guys?
That's great. So kind of what age, so did you ever really feel like you identified yourself as a Mormon or a Latter-day Saint, or did you kind of just feel like, well, this is the church I go to, you know, it's not really part of your identity?
And that's what's kind of funny about it. I never really felt like I belong with them, but even after I left the church, I found myself just defending it all the time. You know, my wife had a really hard time growing up being Lutheran with going to school with all of the different Mormons and the way that they would treat her and keep her kind of on the outskirts. And so she didn't have a good feeling about that, but I would find myself just defending them against her. And so it's kind of funny that you asked that, because I didn't feel like I really fit in with them, and I didn't feel like I fit in with my wife because I'm find myself defending Mormonism.
I've noticed that too with my dad. For a long time, there were some things that happened in his life where he kind of went inactive in the church, but he had served a mission before doing that. And it was kind of the same thing. Like my uncle, I don't know, I guess he left the church and he joined some kind of, I don't know if it's evangelical or what kind of church, but he would talk to my dad and he would say a lot of disparaging things about Joseph Smith on the phone with my dad, you know, and even though he wasn't active at the time, he just got into this heated discussion. He's like, you don't even know what you're talking about. You know, I don't know what your pastor taught you, you know? So it's interesting. Like when you see that opposition, it kind of like stirs up some kind of, I don't know how to describe it, some kind of a visceral emotion or, you know, this deep seated idea in you that otherwise you wouldn't really think about consciously. It's like when they hit a certain spot in you, you know, it kind of reminds you of something and it kind of stirs up emotions that have kind of laid dormant for a while. Brianna, would you kind of, so the same question for you, like, did you ever feel like when you were young that you associated or identified yourself as Latter-day Saint or?
I did. Yeah, I did. I considered myself a very strong Mormon up until, and yeah, it totally changed my world. But yeah, I really did.
Did you ever struggle with ideas of like, kind of like we talked about, like maybe not quite fitting in, or did you feel like you were, you know, you were in the church and like that's where you belong, that kind of a feeling?
It was kind of both. I didn't really fit in very much, but I think it was because I was very quiet and very introverted. I tend to shy away from social interaction, but I loved studying the scriptures, and learning the doctrine. I was really big into that. And a lot of the kids my age, like growing up in the church, they didn't care about that. They wanted to, you know, go to dances, going to EFY, all that social stuff. I was just, yeah.
I can relate to that, definitely. I didn't like the social aspects either. Like my mission was a nightmare those first few months trying to get out of that shell. It's like, I remember being thrown on the street in France, being barely knowing how to say hello in French. And my trainer was just like, all right, go talk to that guy. I'm like, oh, what? What am I supposed to say to him? This is crazy. I can't even speak his language. And then I think I remember I muttered a couple words and then he just kept walking. And he's like, eh, it wasn't too bad for your first try. So, yeah, don't worry. I know I can relate to the whole introvert thing and kind of struggling that way, like feeling part of the group, but you know, because you're not extroverted like a lot of other Latter-day Saints are, it's a little bit of a difference. How about you guys?
Well, I was gonna say real quick too, because you know, you were saying how hard it was to interact with somebody for the first time in French, and I was just thinking like, man, doing it in English wasn't any easier. You know, go talk to that guy. It's like, well, I do speak the same language as him, but man, this is really awkward and embarrassing.
Yeah, and I was going to say too, I expected to like street contacting to get easier as the mission went on, in terms of, you know, once I'm better speaking the language, I'll be able to engage people better. And, you know, man, when I was like 9 months in and had really picked up the language well, and I'd go out street contacting in my second area, it was the same. People just walked past you. They just wanted to get to work or wherever they were headed, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. And Dan, did you serve a mission?
I did not.
Okay.
Just wanted to ask.
I want to ask you a question, Dan, if it's okay, because I kind of want to know what was going on between you and Paul at that time, because I guess he went on a mission after that. And did he try to bring you back into Mormonism or anything?
I would say somewhat, yeah. I think me and Paul had a lot of discussions. I don't recall any of them off the top of my head, but definitely that there was a lot of pressure from, you know, my mom, my brother, my other sister that was real strong in it as well. Yeah, I don't know that, you know, I probably spoke a lot of French and just said we just nodded my head to kind of get through it. But yeah, there was a lot of pressure there, and I definitely felt it. And you know, the episode when you guys were talking about the social aspect of the church, you know, I had a lot of friends in the church, and I'm not really friends with them anymore, other than, you know, I've got a few friends that aren't in the church anymore that are my friends, but you know, the ones that are still heavily in the Mormon church are not interested in really interacting anymore. Tried to reach out to a few of them on Facebook and they weren't really interested in talking or catching up or anything like that. And when I would go back home, you know, I'd reach out to them and say, hey, I'm in town. Do you guys want to go have a beer or something? and nobody would show up, but my non-Mormon friends, you know, they come have a beer with me, so that's pretty cool.
Yep, that's the problem. You said the B word. You need to say RB. You need to say root beer. That's the key to getting your Mormon friends to come hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but wanted to ask if people want to go hang out and have root beer floats. Just sounds kind of weird. It's like, what is this, like seventh grade?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, when you said that you had some conversations with Paul, because Paul had talked about in previous episodes how he had already started kind of questioning during his mission. So... Yeah. So how was that kind of having those conversations while you were yourself were already having questions, Paul?
It was kind of a weird time, right? I was the first child in our family to serve a mission. My older sister did not. And so I felt a lot of pressure to try to make sure that I brought the younger siblings along the covenant path as best I could, right? And it's interesting to hear Danny say that he doesn't remember much about that. And, you know, it's probably just, you know, slipped his mind. But I do feel like I put quite a bit of pressure on you when I came home. I don't know, it was coming back to Utah after having spent 2 years in Europe was a tough transition. Even though I, you know, had spent those years as a Latter-day Saint missionary, it was not Utah, you know. And so being back in Utah was really tough. And, you know, I met Angela and we got pretty serious with our relationship pretty quickly. And the first chance I got when she said, you know, why don't you move out here to the Cincinnati area, I jumped at it and moved out there. So I was only home from my mission. I got home in May of 1999 and I left Utah in December of 1999, right after Christmas. And Danny, you know, he's 7 years younger than I am. So he was in the middle of his teenage years at that point. I guess probably just starting with your real questioning, because you were probably what, around 14 at the time or something. And so, you know, when I moved out here, he came out to visit. And of course, you know, you try to put on a good big brother front, you know, hey, you know, we're faithful in the church, that kind of thing. And of course, I had questions. I remember picking you up from the airport in Louisville and driving back, and you asking questions about different things. And, you know, of course, Dad was telling me you were struggling, quote unquote, struggling with the church. And I felt like I put quite a bit of pressure on you to serve a mission. I don't know if you remember that or not, but I feel like in telephone conversations with you, I really tried to encourage you in that direction. And, I felt bad about it because, you know, it was clear it wasn't something you were going towards. But you know, I was trying to, like I said, bring you along the covenant path. So
did you feel it was kind of like, I don't know, I kind of, when I was really struggling toward questioning around 2005, 2015, 2016, right before I kind of left the LDS church, I kind of ramped up my defense of the church as kind of like a compensation, I guess, for the questions I had. Did you have similar thoughts like that, Paul, when you're talking to Dan or others?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I had aims of becoming an apologist. You know, I wanted to study archaeology and go find the evidence for the Book of Mormon in Central America. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of where my mind was in terms of what I was going to study. I didn't ultimately go that direction, but yeah, spent a lot of time online reading. I don't think FAIR had quite kicked off at that point, but, you know, reading stuff from Farms and Shields and some of the other apologetics boards and sites that were up at the time.
Cool. Yeah. We had kind of a similar experience there. I've noticed that sometimes when we're witnessing to Latter-day Saints and it seems like we're not getting anywhere, a lot of times when they're the most vehement in their defense of the church is kind of when they're almost at their breaking point. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's hard to tell where they are at in their faith. But yeah, so continuing off from kind of where we talked about earlier, unless anybody has anything to add, I wanted to kind of talk more about the transitionary period. So you'd both kind of described in your stories the transition between being a Latter-day Saint and a Christian. Brianna, you kind of talked about how there was a period in your life where you were agnostic. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? I don't want to be too probing, but were you kind of questioning the existence of God and Jesus, or were there certain things of the LDS Church you still held on to that were difficult to let go of? Or would you like to talk more about that?
Okay. Well, so I guess I was just more questioning whether God was real or not. And I kind of went off the belief that, you know, if he was, then Mormonism would have to be true, kind of that kind of mentality. But if he isn't, then I'm just like, what's the point? And so I just kind of like started noticing some of the cultural things that were a little bit off, but it wasn't really so big of a deal. I still like thought that maybe it would be true and I'd give it a shot. But at the same time, I wanted to do my own thing. I was kind of rebellious and just kind of like experimenting in the background while I was still attending church, just to see, you know, that kind of thing. The question was about like the transition. So can you repeat the question about
yeah,
that?
Just more details about the transition from being a believing Latter-day Saint to non-believing, you know, like kind of like, I think you answered it pretty well. You know, like did your ideas and beliefs change slowly over time, or was it kind of like an all or nothing change? Or did you, even between Christianity and Mormonism, did you believe other things? So just kind of that transition period.
Yeah. I guess during that transition, one of the big ideas that Mormonism that affected me was about the Bible. And they believe that it's been corrupted and it's missing precious truths. And during that transition period, one of the questions I wanted to know was whether the Bible could be reliable or not. And I started studying like the archaeology behind it and like the history, and it really got a lot of my attention too, because I'm like, you know, the Bible seems to have a lot more validity than any of the other LDS books of scripture. And so as I delved into that and then the history of Mormonism, I just knew that at that point I'm like, okay, Bible's a lot more reliable, so I want to look into this Christianity. Like, and at that point too, I was, you know, kind of suicidal. So like, you know, with my whole not wanting to go to hell, that's what kind of started that whole thing too. I reached out into a depression support group and I made a little post on there, and there was this evangelical guy, this older gentleman, and he reached out to me in private messenger, and he started talking to me a little bit about religion. He almost became an LDS, like a Mormon, years ago. And then he started talking to me about some of the things that got him to not go through with his baptism. So then he just kind of was there to give me some resources, and that kind of helped me along that path.
That's great. Thank you very much. And you were also speaking earlier about how, so not only you were having more faith or understanding in the authority and the reliability of scripture, but you were also kind of describing how you could rely on Jesus alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk maybe a little bit more about that? Like learning to trust in Jesus rather than an organization or?
Yeah. With Jesus, sorry, I might need to take some moments to respond to that question. I had to kind of come to a point when I realized that the scripture, that by the Bible could be reliable, that I'm like, okay, Jesus, I started learning about like his background and everything. And there was a video that I had watched on YouTube, Jeff Durbin did, I don't remember. It was called The Gospel for Mormons, I think. And I think that was actually during that video. I had been watching several of his stuff, but it was during that video where he kind of explained that you don't need this organization to be this sort of middleman for you and God. Like, you can talk to God directly, and he wants you to reach out to him and to have a relationship with him. For me, as a Mormon, I thought he was kind of, that God was just this far distant, like, being that I just didn't really have a close relationship to. It's just kind of this, I don't know, like, you know how you think about kings and queens, or like even celebrities, like they're just these people that are like way up there and you're out of reach with them. But God came down as a man, and he was just as Jesus, and he just kind of became more relatable, I guess. I don't know what else to add to that. But
so would you say that... So when you're transitioning from the LDS church to Christianity, you would say that God felt closer to you, or he felt more real to you? How did that transition feel like?
Well, I I think I came to that point too, where I didn't know what unconditional love was like until I understood grace. And before then, I had never experienced that kind of love in my life. So once I did, then that's when it all made sense to me.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. Do you guys have anything to add? I know I've kind of taken control of the conversation. So if you guys want to chip in and add anything, go ahead.
I did have a follow-up question for Brianna. I can think back to like one part of my teenage years, like where I was kind of in that transition period with you, where I was kind of agnostic and I was just kind of going through the motions for my family. And I had a paradigm shift where like all my thoughts changed on, you know, I was still kind of like, well, maybe it's true. And I don't want to be, you know, they always talk about don't be on the fence. You either have to be here or here. You can't sit on the fence. And I was definitely sitting on the fence. And so there was a point in my teenage years or the paradigm shift. I'm just curious if you had one moment that kind of shifted your view as well, or if it was just consistent throughout.
I don't know if I have like a specific moment when it really happened, but it kind of like gradually just started shifting as I started developing more ideas about things, going through different experiences. But I started developing this idea that, you know, people weren't perfect. Like the first time when my dad cheated on my mom, it was, yeah, it hit me hard, but like I forgave him for it. And I just thought, you know, like people just make mistakes, you know, they can change and all this and stuff. I had a problem with this one story that, you know, they kind of told this in Young Women's, where this idea that like, with the chewed gum, have you ever heard of that one? It's like this idea where like, basically if you if you break the law of chastity and involves another person before marriage and before you go to the temple, like nobody's going to want you. Like your worth is like all chewed up. Nobody wants to eat chewed gum. So basically we had to be completely virtuous and pure and strive to go to the temple. And I had a problem with that because I thought nobody was perfect. It wasn't their repentance. Isn't Jesus, you know, didn't he forgive the woman who had committed adultery? So yeah, there's little moments like that where over time I just started like having some issues with those kinds of
things. I add something to that too. Like so I have this aunt that was a member of the church just for a short time and left. But she told me, and I guess my experience as a man was different than like what women go through at the church. And that's something I never heard of the whole chewed gum analogy till I met Brianna, because that's all just behind the scenes for me. But something my aunt told me that she was told in the Young Women's class is if somebody tried to rape her or any of them, that it was better to die than to survive that and be a victim of rape, because having your chastity taken is just that. And I'm just like, that is such a horrible thing to tell people, that even if it's against your will and something happens, like you are no longer virtuous or wanted or, you know, or worthy, and you never will be again. It's just incredibly, incredibly strict and disheartening.
Yeah, I never, maybe I had heard it and I just forgotten it, but I hadn't heard the chewed gum example. But I did remember hearing, I can't remember if it was just a thing that Mormons said to each other or if it was on like a Mormon movie, but they said it's like, when you go on a mission, it's better to come home in a box than to come home early. Have you guys heard of that?
I've heard that before.
It's like, oof, man, that's rough. It's kind of the same thing. It's like, really, you know, what a parent, I mean, I didn't hear from my dad or my parents, but I mean, if you were to say that to your kid, that's pretty messed up. Like, yeah. You'd rather they die than come home dishonorably.
Yeah,
I remember as a young woman, like they would kind of instill this idea too, that you had to marry a return missionary, that other guys who don't go on missions or if they failed their mission, like they're not worthy either. So that was one of those things too.
Yeah. The paradigm shift that I had when I was either 13 or 14, I remember, you know, we had a youth a youth gathering, and they were talking about, hey, next week we're going to go to the Martin Harris pageant. And so they were building this pageant up and saying, you know, this is why the church is true, guys. This is going to show you guys why the church is true. And, you know, at that time I was kind of, you know, I was kind of like on the fence and not really leaning either direction. And so I went to this pageant and I was really into it. I was watching every moment of the pageant, and it got to the point where, you know, the pages go missing and I'm like, okay. He's just going to redo these pages. And that proves that it is true. And, you know, and then, no, I'm not going to retranslate the plates. I'm not going to do that, because then you're just going to change them, right? And man, I was like, that proves that it's not true right there. The fact that he won't go back and retranslate them proves that it's not true in my eyes. And so that was just a real, like, paradigm shift in my whole thought process, as far as I can't believe it anymore, and I really have to find a way to get out of this, right? And so, you know, when I graduated high school, I was dating my high school sweetheart, and her mom, the reservation center, she worked for Southwest Airlines, and they closed the reservation center in Salt Lake. And so her mom transferred to Albuquerque, and I moved with them. And so I remember my dad sitting down with me. It was the night before I was going to move, and he was basically pleading with me not to go, not to do it. And he basically said, you know, if this is really what you want to do, go ahead and do it. But he said, I don't think you should. I don't know that this is the right girl for you. And, you know, I told him, I, you know, basically bore my testimony to him. I said, you know, this is the girl. I love this girl, and I'm going to move with her. And I haven't really looked back. You know, I ended up marrying her down in New Mexico, and had two beautiful children now, and I really haven't looked back. So, and I got to say that, you know, a majority of my transition from Mormonism to Christianity has been in large part because of her faith. They're Lutheran, and, you know, a lot of my conversations that I've had with them, you know, I had to deconstruct everything that I was taught about becoming a god someday, and, you know, I'm gonna have my own planet that I'm gonna run. I went through seminary, and, you know, I guess it never really clicked that that's not in the Bible. You know, there were things that they connected from the Bible to the Book of Mormon, you know, in seminary class, but that wasn't one of them. And, you know, that was a hard lesson for me to learn. And going to a Christian church, you know, a Lutheran church, and listening to the pastor, there were a lot of ways I thought that or things that I thought I knew about God that just weren't accurate. They weren't biblical. And that I think, you know, Paul and I have had a lot of discussions over the years, and I've had to deconstruct a lot of things. And, you know, I really filled in the blank with a lot of stuff that isn't scripture at all. just to kind of bridge that from getting from Mormonism to the Bible. So, yeah, it's a challenge. And
so talk a little bit more, Dan, about, you know, when you started to attend the Lutheran church with Lauren and her parents, you started to attend with them in Salt Lake City before you moved to Albuquerque, right?
Yeah. There's a church in Utah called St. Matthew's that they attended, that I attended a few Sundays with them.
Okay. Is that where you played basketball? Is that where I went and watched you play basketball?
I don't think so. I think that was another Lutheran church that had a gym.
Okay. So just a few times in Utah before you moved to Albuquerque then?
Yeah, I think I attended a few youth meetings with them, youth gatherings and things like that. But really, I think it probably wasn't until I moved to Texas that I really kind of shook some of the agnostic feelings that I had. I never really, I mean, I would go, again, it was kind of going through the motion. I believed that there was a God. I just didn't know in what capacity. And Brianna touched on a little bit about that relationship. And I really didn't develop that relationship with Jesus until I came to Texas. And there was a pastor at the Lutheran church, Pastor Luke, that, man, he was fantastic. And he would just speak directly to you. He was so in touch and so spiritually in touch with everything that the congregation was dealing with, that it felt like everybody in that room felt like he was talking directly at them and the things that they were dealing with. Every week he would just come and bring it, and just really fantastic. And in a lot of ways, he changed my views and really helped me develop that relationship with Jesus and encouraged me to really reach out and do that.
What was it like starting to attend a Lutheran church, not Lutheran in particular, but just a Christian church, as a former Latter-day Saint? Were there things about the worship service, the communion, that were different and difficult for you to kind of adopt, or how was that as an experience for you as someone? I know you were kind of agnostic at first, kind of in New Mexico, but what was that like starting to attend a Christian church and think through those things and experience a worship service that wasn't Mormon? Because it's quite different.
Yeah, it was quite different, but in a lot of ways, I think the Lutheran traditional service that my wife's family attended was a fairly easy transition for me, because it's not the live music and all of that. It's just the hymns and things like the Mormon church. So I think that helped me a lot in my transition. It's funny because, I would take communion with them, but I was always taking the grape juice instead of the wine. Because I grew up Mormon, I really don't like the taste of alcohol. I still to this day, I'll drink socially, but I really don't drink for the pleasure of it, really. Don't like the taste. I just never developed the taste. But yeah, to this day, I'll still grab the grape juice. And so, and it tastes better than the water. So, does that answer your question a little bit?
Yeah. Any follow-ups for Dan before we throw that same question to Brianna?
So just curious, do you still attend a Lutheran church, or what church do you attend now?
So with the pandemic, we started going to a rock and roll church. It's a Lutheran church, but it's very contemporary. It might be, a sister church to the one you were attending, Michael. Because they've got the lights. It's kind of, they've got car parts up on the wall with the cross painted on the car parts and things like that. It's just a very, very cool church. The lead pastor and the pastor that I don't know what you call him, but they've got two pastors there, and they're just all tatted up, sleeves of tattoos. But they're really good guys, and Pastor Luke at the previous church I was going to, it was called Prince of Peace. He left and went back to his church back in, I believe, Nebraska. And so the pastor that came in after him just didn't have the same, like, it just wasn't the same. They had like an older gentleman that came in, and it just didn't hit me the same way. And so we bounced around to several different churches around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We even tried a Methodist church at one point, and we landed at this church. It's called Soul Thirst in the colony, and two great pastors. And they speak to me. They talk about brisket, and they talk about queso, and that's all I need to hear.
Sounds like my kind of place. How do I sign up for that?
So Brianna, how about you? Kind of when in your transition did you start attending a Christian church? What was that like to do that for the first time?
So for a while there, I didn't know what church to go to. So I started like watching some of the sermons online first with the Apologia Church. That was like some of my first kind of church experiences, but it wasn't really going to church. But then I got connected online with some people on the Ex-Mormon Christians group. And Carrie, she kind of like helped me. This lady named Carrie, she lived nearby at the time. And she's like, what? Like, I need to take you to church. And she brought me to Calvary Chapel. So I got to experience that for the first time. It's like this little, like, kind of like a mega church, but they teach expository chapters, like each chapter and verse by verse. And that experience was kind of shocking. I remember going to the service and they had music. It was really loud. It was very big, totally different environment. And I just sat down and I was just kind of like taking it all in. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And she was kind of funny because she was kind of standing there and she was like worshiping like her heart out. And she was like with her hands up and kind of like dancing to the music and singing. And it was so different. But it also, I felt like these people, like they felt like more free. Like in the Mormon church during sacrament, I mean, you had to be quiet and like reverent and like kind of stiff. And there they were free to worship, like just open their hearts out. And I really liked that. Going there is totally different, but it was awesome.
What about that? What about that like Pentecostal church you went and visited?
Yeah, that was the first church I visited on my own. After doing some research online, I'm like, I'll try this one church. And it ended up kind of being a little freaky for me. It was in the evening and they had like this kind of like, what would you call it? Like the preacher was up there and he was like calling out to the crowd and he's like, he was like sensing like whatever illness in this person in their name. And then he was like, I'm going to bless you. Pour the Holy Spirit on you. And people were praying around him. And like at one point too, like they had everybody like kind of whispering and praying. And like you could hear a bunch of voices all around you. It was like, it was really interesting, but it kind of put me off a little bit. It was good.
At least they didn't hit you or anything.
No.
You could have ended up in like one of those snake churches. That would have been a fun church to go to first as an ex-Mormon.
I went to an entrance church like that too. My father-in-law, he plays guitar and he was playing in a lot of church bands. And one of the guys he was playing with was like, hey, I got invited to play at this church and he needs a lead guitar. We need a lead guitarist to help play. And so we went to this church, you know, the whole family went, this is before me and Lauren had kids. And so it was me, my mother-in-law and my wife, and we pull into this address, you know, we've never heard of it before. It was just a Joe's church. And it's kind of like an abandoned, strip mall. And some of the businesses had like boarded up windows and things like that. And so we were just like, okay, what's going on here? So we go into one of the businesses. It was a church and it was the only thing in the whole strip center that was open. And so we go in there and it was similar to that. You know, we went through the whole service and it was semi-normal, you know, it wasn't real normal. And then at the end of the service, you know, then everybody started sticking out their tongues. Some people were talking in tongues. Some lady was crawling up the middle of the aisle and I was like, okay, let's go. but it wasn't anything that we were like, okay, we're going to start attending this church. It was just like, they needed a guitar player and that was the sole reason why we were there. But, Larry didn't go play there again. My father-in-law.
I was going to point out earlier when you guys, it sounded like your churches are a lot more exciting than mine. It's like, if you've ever attended, you know, like in most Mormon churches, there's kind of like the steady background noise of kids and ruffling and, you know, people eating Cheetos or whatever. But it's like, you guys would probably feel really uncomfortable in my church because we have like a cry room and we don't keep the babies in the actual worship, you know, in the sanctuary. So it's like, sometimes you can like hear a pin drop in there. So it's like, sometimes when I reach in my pocket to get a tissue, I'm like, careful, don't do it. You know, it's like Mission Impossible. You know, you don't want to set any alarms off. You know, they call Calvinists the frozen chosen for a reason. So just keep that in mind if you ever come visit.
Do they keep the air down really low there too? Or, you know, frozen
chosen? good one. So in any of these churches that you've visited after your transition out of the LDS church, did you ever encounter any kind of legalism or legalistic tendencies? And if you did, how did you handle that? So Dan, sounds like no. How about you, Brianna?
No, I did not really experience any of that going to any of the churches, but I do see it more online with some of the Christians on the forums. But that's it that I've personally.
It is kind of funny interacting with a lot of Christians on Facebook or discussion groups, because they could probably be the nicest people you'd ever know. But as soon as you bring up the topic of baptism or gifts of the Spirit, it's like, you know, the gloves are off and, you know, they just turn into wildebeests. So, but you know, like you talk to them in person and they're cool people. So yeah, I think the internet just engenders a kind of more conflict, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've been seeing a lot of it recently too, like, especially with the election, you know, both sides just kind of like, you're not a real Christian if you vote for so-and-so. And I'm just like, that's kind of ridiculous. And then, you know, Halloween came and there's all these posts online, like, you're, you know, false Christians are the ones, you know, celebrating on Halloween and everything. And I'm just like, it kind of puts me off. And I think it's because of my Mormon background and all the legalism there, you know, but I'm just like, okay, that's a false dichotomy. Cause I'm like, even if that's true, you know, even if it's wrong to celebrate Halloween, like, there's not just those two camps. Like, there should still at least be a third camp, which is, you know, people who aren't as sanctified yet or haven't done their research. But I'm just like, oh, no, they're automatically, you know, fake Christians. And that's one of the things that just gets to me the most. And it's just that judgmental background that we came from. And every time I see it, it just makes me want to shut down. Immediately, like, I have no tolerance threshold for it at all. I mean, I don't know if you guys are better at dealing with it than I am, but it's just very hard for me and very triggering for me whenever I see it.
Yeah, I struggle with it a bit. I think mostly I've just learned to kind of turn it off. You know what I mean? Because early on, I probably would have said something. You know, if I saw it going on, like, in a Facebook group that where I was involved. But I realized it just, a lot of times, it just leads to arguments. And it is one of those things where it's like, okay, do I start arguing with this Christian in a Facebook group where there might be Latter-day Saints who are going to use that as evidence that we're not unified and that kind of thing. So I just kind of let it go most times. But my experience with legalism in church is it was really refreshing, actually, because I remember one of the first, so I think